Triage. I don't know. I don't speak French.
No, I don't know what they call it up there. What do they call it when you first get into A&E?
I think it is still called triage.
It's called E. God, it hurts.
Come on.
Hey, this is Mark Asquith, CEO and co-founder at Rebel Base Media, the UK podcasting experts. Maybe you're thinking to yourself, it's time that I started my own podcast. Because as we know, podcasting is a wonderful way to build audience engagement, a wonderful way to interact and connect with your audience. And it's a wonderful way to build your business. Well, you can get started with your own podcast today for just £1 by checking out Captivate.fm, the world's only growth-oriented podcast hosting company, analytics platform, and distribution center. Go and start podcasting today for just £1 at Captivate.fm.
Hello, welcome to another episode of Marketed Not Live, the podcast for marketers who are looking to their own community to find out exactly what's going on and, you know, importantly, what is around the corner for you to take advantage of very soon. Now, in each episode, we'll bring to you a guest to talk about a specific marketing topic that's going to help you broaden your horizons. That is the whole point of this show. If you're just focused on things like social media, do you know what? You need to get out of that bubble and you need to learn about SEO, branding, customer experience, and we're going to help you do that just by letting you listen to your peers. Now, we've got some great guests lined up in this season, including speakers from this year's Marketed Live, which of course takes place on Monday, the 30th of September 2019 at Nottingham Contemporary. Look it up if you don't know where it is. It'd be great if we had you there too, so make sure you check out marketed.live online and get your hands on one of the limited number of tickets left. Now, in today's episode, we've got two of I don't want to call them odd. I want to call them unique guys on the circuit. They are Rob and Kennedy. They're the founders of Response Suite, an incredible online survey tool used by small businesses to make more sales. There is some action here, and that is really what I'm interested in. They're also the hosts of Three Marketers Walk Into a Podcast, and they've been very charitable by allowing me to be on that show, so that's great. Now, all of that information is from their official bios that they gave me, but what they failed to mention is that they're also stage performers as well. So when you see them in September, let me tell you, it's going to be a great performance. That's what we like. So let me introduce to you Rob and Kennedy. Hello, guys.
Hello.
I'll take odd, incidentally.
Yes, will you?
Odd's fine.
Oh, good.
And charitable also. Odd and charitable.
Oddly charitable.
Oddly charitable. There's a strap line.
No jokes.
Welcome to the podcast. Welcome to Marketed Not Live. It's great to have you on the show. Have I done, apart from the odd and charitable, have I done you justice in terms of what you do?
Yes.
I mean, it's, yeah, sure.
Come on.
It's way more than I would have said, but yeah.
Oh, really? Okay.
I'm not sure this interview is going to live up to the introduction.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. Tell us a little bit about, we'll probably come on to the stage stuff, right? But tell us a little bit about segmentation. Like, what is it? What do we mean by it? And maybe why would anyone need to even think about it?
Well, selling is getting more difficult, isn't it? Acquiring new customers is getting more expensive. Finding people who are red hot for the offer that you've got and getting that offer in front of them at exactly the right time is becoming more difficult because there's more noise all over the place. So the key to making that happen more often is understanding that everybody in your audience, whether they're on your email list, in your social media following, whether they're seeing your Facebook ads or something, in your audience, they're all different people with different hopes. And therefore, in order to find out what they actually want, you need to be able to ask the right questions to put them into the right little segments just to make sure that you're always speaking their language. You're always putting the right message in front of the right people.
Is that about relevance then?
It's about relevance to them at that particular moment in time. So there's this statistic that gets banded around the internet for email marketers that the number one reason why people unsubscribe from your email officially is that people are receiving too much email. And the where that's come from, incidentally, is that when you unsubscribe from somebody's list, they will quite often give you a random list of radio buttons that say, which of these is the reason why you're unsubscribing?
Yeah.
And one of them is, I'm receiving too many emails. And that's the one that gets clicked most often. It also happens to be on the top of the list, which also does warp it a little bit.
It does.
does, but is it really true? Because let's be honest, if I'm receiving an email every single day for a really attractive blonde lady who tells me how much she wants to date me, I'm probably never going to unsubscribe from that list because the thing I'm receiving is something I'm interested in. It strokes my ego. It's something I really want to hear from. So the real reason underneath all of that is that we receive too much irrelevant email, too many surprise tangents that people have gone off on because it doesn't really address the thing that we really care about right now.
Okay, so I totally understand that because I think you're right. When certainly if I get emails and I think, well, you know, I'm annoyed about this and this isn't of interest, it might be that something else would be. So what you're talking about really is helping a business understand which message to give.
Yeah, I mean, for example, let's imagine that you teach social media, right, on the internet, and somebody finds your website and they put their email address in to subscribe to your list because you've offered to bribe them with a free report that is about the top 10 trends in social media. That's great. So somebody goes ahead, pops their email address in. Now, at that point, what most marketers do, and naturally, and we did it for years, is to assume that all those people need help in exactly the same way with exactly the same thing. Because after all, they are interested in social media, aren't they?
And they've downloaded your white paper. Or
but actually what you realize is that if you look at that audience, you don't know whether those people are just starting out trying to get their first followers on Instagram and they need help with that, or have they got a million followers on Instagram but their content's not really getting engagement, or have they got really great engagement and a really great following but they're struggling to convert that into sales. And suddenly you realize, I could go on, there's like 20 or 30 different things that those people might need help with, and the only thing you know about them is they are vaguely interested in social media.
I see. So the thoughts come into my head that, you know, is this like triage almost? So you're kind of giving people an option to say, you know, if you're a multi-billion dollar company, then, you know, their needs or the message needs to be different to your startup.
Triage, I don't know, I don't speak French.
No. I don't know what they call it up there. What do they call it when you first get into A&E?
I think it is still called triage.
It's called God, it hurts.
Come on.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. Yes, you are right. Like, everybody, despite the fact that, even businesses who say, well, do you know what? I only sell to single mums who work from home, right? That might be their thing. And they go, that's a really narrow demographic. That's easy for me to understand. But actually, the truth is that when you look at that, you might have a million mums who all work from home and they're all in your audience. But the problem with that is some of them are motivated by different things to others. So some of them are motivated by the comfort of being able to work from home and raise their kids, whereas others are raised by, well, I want to be able to buy my son a Ferrari when he hits 18, and now I'm all motivated by money. Some of them are very stressed and they don't work well with, you know, on their own, and they're looking for a sense of community. Others are I'm a lone wolf here. I want to go at this on my own. So suddenly you realize, like, emotionally, everybody's totally different. And so people need to hear the things that are going to speak to their motivations, to their desires and their pain points.
So this is about gathering that data, that information that allows you to have a more nuanced message that's perhaps going to resonate better and therefore is going to get you better results.
Exactly.
Well, exactly. It's a bit like, you know, that there are certain ways and styles of putting a post out there on LinkedIn, which will get responded to better than the way you put things and you nuance things, as you say, over on the Blue Place, over on Facebook, or over on Twitter or something like that. Each one is going to be very, very different. And it's the same to do with that message, isn't it? And one of the things that's really interesting is it's really trendy and feels kind of cool to build up this massive, like, Instagram following, and you've got like a bajillion followers, and that's all grand and everything. Like, you've got loads of people following you on Facebook or whatever your preferred platform is. But until you have their email addresses, until they're actually in your marketing sequences, you do not own that data yet. So yes, it might feel sexier to go out there and be like, hey, I'm sexy, I'm cool, I've got loads of people liking my stuff on the old Instagram. But let's remember that the real value is when you own the data. And if Instagram change their pants tomorrow and decide, well, you can't do what you're doing, or they close you down because they've changed some rule, or you accidentally overstepped the mark, then you don't have that data. So you can't really do any of this stuff until you bring them into that email thing, which, again, makes it more important than ever to be sending relevant messages for not just now, but like as people move and thinking about that customer journey as they go forward and thinking about how do you make sure you're adjusting and moving along that customer journey so you're being relevant going forward as well.
So I think you're right, because, I mean, let's face it, these platforms do and will continue to change and decide to do things differently. So let's accept then that getting on an email list is important. And another thing that's interesting, what you said there about, you know, the size of audience. I don't know about you, but I'm definitely feeling, from talking to lots of different marketers, a sense of big is not always great. That you know, smaller, more focused, more engaged followers or email list, you know, is the way to go. And that if people unsubscribe, then, you know, great, you know, happy days, they've unsubscribed, they're not for us, all that kind of thing. Is that you picking that up as well?
So I think to answer this one, we're going to go over to the master of size doesn't matter. Rob, you're going to answer this one.
We'll just edit that bit out.
I mean, when people are, and we did this, right? When people start out with your business and you realize I can build this thing called an email list and I'll be able to email them, this is going to be great. We're all really green and like just getting started and dead enthusiastic. And you think, right, I'm going to build a list of a bajillion people and then I'm going to make a bajillion times more than somebody who's got a list of one person. And we followed that for a really long time until a few years ago when a couple of things happened. First of all, we started doing some webinars for people and we started to see that people who had a ginormous list of many, many hundreds of thousands of people were actually sending us way less traffic than some of the newer people starting up who had smaller lists. When we dug into it, we realized it's actually those smaller lists, they were more targeted towards specifically what we were talking about. They had more opportunity to build trust and like you know, to start to like that marketer.
And there's a big lesson coming out of that. You know, if you're looking at creating partnerships, joint venture arrangements, that kind of thing, don't be so, one of the things we would definitely change if we were to start over again would be, don't get boggled by and attracted to those marketers and those potential partners who've got these massive lists. Go for people who are super targeted, even if they had like 50 people. But if those 50 people are customers and they love them, and every time that person says jump, the audience says, hey, how high? Then those are the people that you want to go for, rather than going, that person's a big name, they've got a bajillion people on their list, as Rob said.
What almost every marketer will notice, that as you start building your list, once you get past about 1,000 people, open rates and click-through rates drop significantly. So when somebody starts building a list and they're getting their first few dozen or hundred subscribers, your open rates can typically be 40, 50, 60%. And then, if somebody's new, once they tip over that 1,000, 2,000 subscribers mark, industry-wide, most marketers see their open rates tumble to like 20%.
Why is that?
And then it only goes down from there. And what happens is that they suddenly think, oh my God, something's broken. I've done something wrong. I've offended loads of people. I've said something I wasn't supposed to say. I've done something wrong. Actually, that's just the way it works. And it just continues to get worse, unfortunately. And the truth is, the more people you get on the list, the harder it is to talk to each of them like individuals. So I think to a certain extent, small is mighty.
So why is that then? Why would you see a smaller, lower open rate just because there are higher numbers?
I think it's to do with the fact that as your list grows, because everybody is so different, as your list grows, the opportunity for those differences to appear grows. So if you've got 100 people, they're going to have some differences between them for sure, but there's going to be some correlation between them. The more people you get, the bigger those discrepancies between people come, okay. The more variety of people you now have to try and appeal to with your writing. Now, obviously, segmentation makes that easier for sure.
And also there might be another reason there, which is that if you had a tribe of only 5 people, the chances are you've probably had personal one-to-one regular contact with those people. Whereas if you've got 100,000 people, obviously that's much less likely. So there could be a correlation to do with their expectation for how much they're personally impacted or personally connected with you as well.
I see. Yeah. No, that does make sense, because you can't scale that really, can you? Not really. Okay. Right.
Yeah.
So what you're saying is about things like whether it's surveys or whatever it is, but by segmenting and asking people questions allows you to identify those different groups. Would you advocate, and I appreciate we're sort of getting into email strategy really, but would you advocate going, okay, well, let's say I've got an email list of 1,000 people and I know roughly that they're split into two halves. Mm-hmm. One is, like you say, mums who are working, and the other are people who work in maybe business, right? So they've got two different needs or two different things that would appeal to them. Mm-hmm. Are you an advocate of saying, well, actually, we want to try and appeal to both of those, so let's do two separate messages?
Mm-hmm.
and use that segment to hone that message?
Two separate messages. Some email platforms will allow you to do conditional content. Okay. So you might have some people who are tagged with one thing and some people who are tagged with another thing. So what's your favorite color? Some people say purple, some people say yellow. Okay, great. We'll tag them with purple. We'll tag them with yellow. And now when you go to send out that email, some email platforms, we use Infusionsoft. You can't easily do it with that. It would have to be two separate emails. But for example, with ActiveCampaign, you can just merge in a different word or sentence based on one particular tag. And so you can send the email once, but actually an entire paragraph, sentence, or word, or picture, or element can be added in that email based on that tag, which is really interesting.
Okay, so my mind's racing now. So in the future, is that something that could be done by AI?
I think as the artificial intelligence and learning systems become more robust, and as they continue, if you integrate any kind of learning, so dynamic learning systems, then yeah, I think you could certainly look at what is affecting people's behaviors. And it'll be interesting. It's going to be very interesting over the next few years as this machine learning stuff continues to grow, how email marketing and autoresponders and all those platforms shift with that. Because I don't know of any who are really doing anything really clever with that in terms of saying, actually, we've realized that the females between 18 and 25 on your list tend to open up your emails if the opening line is, hey, then their name, yeah, versus the females who are 50 plus on your list who prefer it when you say, dear Mrs. whatever or whatever. So I think that'll be really interesting to see how and who and if that gets adopted, but there's certainly power in that. I mean, it is being done by a lot of platforms in terms of, I don't know how many people know this or how widely spread this knowledge is, but if you log into your online banking system, for example, you'll see there's photographs of people around inside of there, just as like nice placeholders to make you feel like it's not just a big empty space. But the photographs and the imagery and the language used inside of your online banking are different depending on your demographic data. So if my dad were to log into his online banking, he doesn't. He's one of those guys who calls HSBC every single day to find out what his balance is. And it's the same every day, Dad. It's the same. But if he were to log in, he would see pictures of people probably 70 plus. My dad's 74. So he'd be seeing pictures of people who are 70 plus, sort of that whole trust thing. Whereas when I log in, I see trendy business people who are probably like techpreneurs with their laptops. So even looking at your user experience of how people identify with your content can absolutely and is being absolutely shifted right now.
Wow, I've never paid attention to that. I am so looking at my bank straight after this.
And it will tell you a lot about what the bank thinks of you.
So I once went to one of these tech shows and this was before personalized billboards were really that possible, but it was like an early prototype. This is some years ago now. It's an early prototype where you walked up to the billboard and it identified what your demographic was as you walked up to it, and then showed you an ad that was relevant to you. It would have been fine, except that I was classed as a 50 something woman and got showed like some kind of, I don't know, pants thing. I don't know, but it was a long time ago. I can't quite remember, but it definitely wasn't relevant. But I think that's quite interesting because it is data. It's data that I guess in this example that we're talking about that we would have, because like you're saying, we're collecting the data really, because it's our data.
Of course. And the thing is, for many of us are smaller businesses than those massive monsters who are collecting all of that data, your Googles and your Facebooks of this world. That sounds like a real intimidating beast to even try and move towards. But really, if you think about it, if you just start collecting information by asking people for that information, what's your opinion about this? And do you prefer that? Or what's your current struggle right now? What's your current challenge? And you can start just giving more direct information. One of the things Rob and I often talk about is how the way we consume everything these days is very, very different to when, do you remember when we were younger, we used to run home from work or school in order to watch our favorite television show, to catch that show we really wanted to see. Whereas these days, look, I mentioned my dad before, if he calls me up and says, hey, Kennedy, are you watching that thing on? And then I, even before he says BBC One or on whichever channel, I know the answer's no, because do any of us consume content that way?
No, we don't. I've had the exact same conversation with my dad.
Right?
It starts so exactly
like, are you watching that thing? I'm like, yeah. What's it on? Where? And he's like, it's on the telly. Yeah, Dad. But there's loads of stuff on the telly and I'm picking what I watch. Because now we live in a... we don't consume content on other people's schedules. We don't decide, I'm going to try and tune into something based on when somebody else tells us that's the thing that's available. We now expect life to be a pick and mix of the things we want. Like, we expect the things we want to have available to us, the television we watch, the products we want to buy, basically a bit like one of those old choose your own adventure stories, like Goosebumps. Remember when they used to say, turn to page 26 if you think the little boy went into the dark, scary forest, and turn to page 42 if you think he got on the bus and went home to see his mum. They were my favorite books because I got to choose what the outcome of the story was. And that's the world we live in right now. We can choose, do I go to that website? Do I want to watch that piece of content? We choose everything now. And so what's incredible is, for the most part, most entrepreneurs, business people, salespeople, marketers, all of us have not connected the dots that our marketing needs to do the same thing, where people get to say, hey, right now, my personal struggle is traffic to my website, not conversion. It's not figuring out what my offer is. I really need help getting more traffic because I'm really comfortable with the rest of it, because the traffic that has been coming here, it converts like bonkers. That's great. I really need help with that one thing. Rather than you now putting me through a whole bunch of communications, which are totally irrelevant to me, let me pick and you can help me sooner.
It seems quite obvious when you explain it, like that, about, you know, taking information about, well, what's your challenge, or do you struggle from these things? They're very straightforward questions to ask, and very relevant questions to ask. But I'm wondering how far we should be taking that. So I'm gonna, you know, let's talk about GDPR, okay. You know, which is around personal data. Now, I guess if we're asking the question, they're supplying it, so they must be giving consent, but is there a risk that we ask questions that are not relevant and are a bad idea to store that information on?
Of course. I mean, one of the things we have is we have built this platform, Response Suite, which allows you to build your own surveys. We don't build them for you. We've made it so simple to build this level of intelligence for yourself without having to know anything about technology or anything like that, without any, which means we've given people the freedom to ask whichever question they want to ask. But the way to think about this in terms of making sure you don't actually fall foul of any kind of legislation or overstepping the mark is...
Quick disclaimer, we're not lawyers, but...
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're not lawyers, but you should make sure you do what you're doing is good and proper and legal and ethical as well above everything. So is to think, what is the purpose of my survey in this case, or the question that I'm asking? The reason that you could fall foul of some of this, one of the reasons you could fall foul of some of this, is some of the same reasons that some people might end up with lower completion rates of their surveys than they might expect. And that is basically most of the surveys that we give feedback on for our customers, because we're constantly in dialogue with customers, is that you haven't decided what the one single intention of this survey is. Is it to get feedback? If it's just to get feedback, ask your feedback questions, nothing more, nothing less, move on. If the intention of your survey is to find out how you can offer a new offering to that person, then ask the question you need to ask, or the questions you need to ask, in order to fill that one singular focus. If you're asking anything more than that, or let's put it another way, if you've got a survey right now and you want to get better results from it, a really simple thing to do is go to that survey, open it up right now as you listen to us, and look for any questions you've made non-mandatory, non-required questions, and ask yourself, well, if it's not required, why am I asking the question? Because if it's not a required question, and it probably means you're just doing some filler, you're probably asking some questions because, air quotes, it's the thing you're supposed to do. The truth is, the thing you're supposed to do is serve the client really, really well, and fulfill on the one singular thing that your one single objective that you set at the outset of running the survey. So if it's to run a survey as an application form, well, what do you actually need to know in order to get somebody on a call to see if they're a really good fit? Do you need to know if they've got the right budget or if they're in the right phase of their business or if they need help with the thing that you actually solve? And above and beyond that, don't ask any more questions because you're putting yourself at risk and you could also be putting yourself in a place where you're going to reduce the completion rates. So it's about really getting focused on the why, which we hear all the time in marketing. But if you have that one singular why for your survey, then you're going to end up being able to achieve and drive that person forward, help them out, and also drive more sales for yourself.
You must see a lot of surveys.
Yeah.
Right. Is there any, getting specific now, is there any sort of guide, do you think, in terms of how many questions one should ask or how many pages? I mean, if I see something that's like, you know, you fill out a page and then you click next and it's like you are 5% through, it's like, no thanks. But yeah. Is there any kind of like optimum number of questions or how long it should take or something like that to get better responses from people or better completion rates perhaps?
Yeah, so it's obviously one of those things where you want to ask as many questions as you need to ask to get what you need and then no more. But to be more specific than that, we found that any more than 4, maybe 5, and a maximum of 6 questions is going to be too many. Most of the time, we can do it in 4. Bearing in mind what Kennedy just said about this goal of having a survey that just achieves one objective. So maybe that objective is to find out what people are looking for so you can make them the right offer by email. What's the shiny silver thing you're going to offer them? It may be, well, I'm running a webinar and I want to get more of my webinar registrants to actually attend the live webinar. Great. That's only one objective there. That's all that's got to do. Maybe you've got a membership program or something that's a subscription, like a gym membership, and you want to have something that surveys people when they leave to find out what it is so you might be able to sell them back in. It's only got one objective. Maybe you've got a high-ticket coaching application form. You've only got one objective, which means that whatever your objective is, there's probably one or two questions you absolutely have to ask in order to get the piece of information you need. So that would be things like, why did you leave? What's your budget right now? What's your biggest pain point right now? So there's probably only one or two questions that you need in order to make a decision about what you're going to say to that person in order to get them to move one step closer towards achieving that objective. And anything beyond that, it's really just filler.
It is. And some other golden rules for putting your surveys together is we have a saying here at Response Week, which is have people click, not think. And that basically means try and remove as many, if not all, of the open-ended box types, typey-typey answer fields.
Like essay answers.
Essay answers, that kind of thing. You want to remove them and replace them with multiple choice or single choice or big picture where they choose one. And the reason for that is if you have people just click, they'll complete them. Whereas if they have to sit back and think and go, oh, I really need to have a little think about that. Do I really love Prince's Purple Rain more than his other song? Is that the song I like the most? Yeah, I think I'll type Purple Rain. Purple Rain, Purple Rain. And that'll be fine. But it's going to disengage people and they're going to think, I'm going to have to come back to this later. Whereas what you want is them to be able to fairly mindlessly, intuitively, knee-jerk reaction, click, 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 type in my email address, submit, done, and have it over and done with for them.
And of course, what you want to do is make sure that you are routing people through in the most logical possible way. For example, we were speaking to one of our clients recently who has a high-ticket consulting program. He's using Response Suite as the application form for it. And so one of the questions, he helps the software platform owners to do a better job with their software platform. And one of their questions was, do you have a software platform right now? And one of the options is no, in which case you just need to get to the end of the survey really quickly, the end of the form, because there's nothing else. There's any point in asking those people because there's nothing else they can do right there. So we just changed it. So as soon as they click no, it hides all the other questions and just gets them straight to the end. Mm-hmm. So just make sure that as you route through, you're passing people down a path where you only ask them stuff that's still relevant.
So this idea of mass personalization that we talked about in the emails, so you're only sending irrelevant emails, is the same in the surveys you send. So for example, what you should also do is make sure that you're connecting your surveys to your email system so that it passes all that feedback that, oh, I really need help with this, or no, I don't have a software platform, into your email marketing system or your CRM or whatever. So now you can do the perfect follow-up with that. So again, that all joins up as that perfect journey for that person.
Because it then looks super relevant and they're more likely to
read it. Totally. I mean, you get this stuff.
Can I just ask you then about, because you know, I'm kind of, again, thinking, and this is what happens on this show. Like, I interview people and I'm like, shit, I've got a lot of work to do now.
We could talk about this stuff all right. day. So
but is it better then? So what you're saying is it's better to ask fewer questions. And I would admit that I tend to be asking a lot. And now I'm thinking, right, okay, I need to kind of cut that out. Is it better, therefore, if you have got a fair few things to ask, is it okay to send multiple surveys but with fewer questions? So that over time, I mean, I'm not saying like one a day, but over time, you are gradually getting the information that you need.
The surveys sort of serve two different functions. The first one is that you get to run it as part of a campaign now and probably make some instant sales. But the other bit of it is that you're also able to, so what we would recommend is the other questions you have that are not deciding factors on what you're about to promote to them would be gathering useful data for the future. So for example, you might say, okay, well, great. What I want to do is I want to collect data about everyone on my list who is male or female, or within these age brackets or something, so that later, if you're going to run an offer that is strictly for people of a certain age range or a certain gender or both, you can just pull up a quick matrix of all the people who have that tag because they're male and that tag because they're 35.
A really good example of this is location. So you might do some in-person events versus some online events. It's a common use of this.
So the more of this stuff you can collect over a period of time, the better. Now, of course, like you've said there, you do want to make sure that if you're going to run multiple surveys, they happen over a period of time. But a great example of that is, let's imagine that you've got some sort of list build campaign and somebody subscribes because they want to get that free download, that white paper. They want to get that free download. Once they're in, you send them
a little black book of secret contacts.
Exactly. You send them an email which says, hey, I'd love to find out more about you as we start this new relationship. Would you mind just popping over, letting me know a bit more about you? So they click on the survey, they go ahead, they fill it out, and maybe they tell you a couple of things. Maybe they tell you where they're at in their journey right now and what their goals are, where they'd like to be, as well as what their biggest struggle is. Great. Well, now you know what their biggest struggle is, so you can sell them the right product for that. But you also have a little tag that knows, where do they want to be in the next 12 months time? Okay, great. They want to be making £100,000 a year in the next 12 months time, as opposed to they want to be making £1 million. That's somebody else who's tagged differently. Great. That's really useful information. Now, as they go down the line, maybe a month later, you promote a webinar to them and they register for that webinar. And on that webinar, you're going to talk to them a bit more about social media, for example. And now they go ahead and they fill in a quick survey to say, I'm looking forward to the webinar and here's a bit more about me. And you might ask them some different questions like, what's your favorite social media platform to use? Where's your audience? And they go, I think my audience are on Instagram. Great. So now you've got a little tag that says, well, that person is looking to make $100,000 in the next 12 months and they like Instagram. So you're sort of collecting this really useful data over a period of time, which allows you to make all of your future communications more relevant, as well as that one campaign happening right there and then.
Smart. And again, it comes down to data and where you store it, I guess, so you can use it later. But I do like that approach. Here's a question for you. You know, you talk very vivaciously, if I may say so, about this kind of stuff. And I'm wondering, in your alternative careers as a mind reader and hypnotist, how these things fit together, right? So did you? I don't know which came first, actually.
The tech, or the, I don't know.
What came first?
So, I mean, basically, Rob and I independently have been entertainers for Rob for 16 years, me for 17, mainly because I'm older.
Makes sense.
Indeed.
And my redhead friend. And one of the things, so what the thing is, I've been performing after dinner at conferences, doing the mind reading comedy after dinner mind reading thing for at least 16 years, where I mainly perform at like conferences and awards dinners and that kind of thing. And Rob's been doing the hypnosis thing and theater tours. He used to live in Greece, one of the Greek islands, performing for holidaymakers for years. So we were doing that. But one of the things that people don't realize about entertainers is your show is probably 45, 60, maybe 90 minutes in length. But the rest of the time, you're either in a departure lounge waiting for a flight to go do a show, you're waiting in the hotel or in the bar before the show, it's the next morning, you're traveling home from a show. So basically, for a 45, 60, let's even say 90-minute show, you've probably done a couple of hours travel to get there, a few hours travel to get back. There's a load of wasted time. And so during that time, we independently, and we didn't know this about each other, even though we've been friends for a long time, we ended up being online entrepreneurs, sort of like closet entrepreneurs.
Closetpreneurs, if you like.
Oh, that's a nice... yeah.
So, quick, register the domain.
Yeah, .com. And And so we ended up doing this. And what I ended up, for me, I ended up by accident doing what's known as information marketing. I didn't know this at the time, but I would basically get people asking me, saying, Kennedy, how come you're so busy? You're doing 3 to 4 shows a week and all these things. You're getting paid very nicely. You have a lovely lifestyle. I'm an entertainer too. How do I do it? And I sort of started.
They were green with envy.
Yeah, they were. They were like, oh, I don't really know how to do it. So I said, well, I can coach you if you like. So I took on a couple of coaching students and that was good. But then I wanted to scale that up because I thought I've got loads of free time. I could do something. So I ended up having an online, and I still have it right now. I still have it's a membership program. It's online with an offline print newsletter that I have members right across the world where I help them to build their entertainment businesses, sales, marketing, motivation, productivity, time management, all that sort of stuff. Because like most of us, we ended up having a business because of the thing we were passionate about in the first place. And Rob had a similar story. People were asking him to help them with hypnosis. And then, will you help me to overcome my fears and phobias and all that personal development stuff? And he ended up forging a world of expertise where he was also marketing himself on the internet. And through doing that, we both ended up with this problem where we understood the power of asking questions to understand our audience so we could put the perfect offer in front of each person that they were gagging to buy every single time. And so we thought, well, why the hell don't we just ask them and put these surveys out that everyone's doing? Instead of using surveys just like as the cul-de-sac of your marketing to collect feedback, why don't we instead use them as like a fulcrum to bring one sort of marketing and sales process or conversation to an end while opening up the next one. And when we looked around online, we couldn't find a platform that did it in a complete way, in the most complete way. And so Rob and I, neither of us are technical whatsoever. We hardly know our /forward from our /. It's true. And we thought, how are we going to put this together? We both were independently looking for something to invest in. We both had a little bit of savings to one side. And so we started this business and we hired two phenomenal people who really run things here for us and everything, which is, it's been amazing to be able to develop this right here in the northeast of England, in this very room we're standing in right now. It's all happening around us. And we can be disruptive and challenge everything from the perspective of two people who are not technical, and we need to make it work in our businesses. And we run the campaigns that we share with people with Response Suite in our businesses and test them out in there. And it's just great to be able to share all that stuff with people and watch other people get results with it as well. Of course, we're now building a business out of this and to be able to do that as well and have other income coming in while we're out doing the gigs as well. So yeah, that was my monologue. I hope you enjoyed it.
Cool, I feel story. Like, this is your life. No, I do.
And who is this voice? Henrik, it's your mum. Excellent.
I do like a backstory. To be fair, I think it's good. Everyone, you know, has their own story to tell. Now, but don't go playing any of your blooming mind tricks or hypnotize me before Marketed Live. Let me tell you, that won't go down very well. I'll have worked hard on my session.
We came last year and we had just the best time. So we're really looking forward to seeing everybody again.
Oh, it'll be great. Now, listen, I've got some standard questions.
Okay.
As the season has been developed, it still doesn't have a title for this segment. So you can think of, I don't know, maybe come up with a title. Maybe we'll ask via a survey. How about that?
Holy moly, imagine.
Yeah. But let's get some questions on the go. Right. Okay, guys. So quick question here. Who do you think is killing it in marketing right now?
Who is killing it in marketing?
You're
right
a massive
now?
Fan of Todd Brown.
Todd Brown is my hero. I absolutely think what Todd's doing through he's got a really good way of just real honesty, really pragmatic, just going out there and doing it. So for ads and funnels, Todd Brown for me. I'm also a huge fan of content-wise. Janet Murray is killing it. Love Janet to pieces. We all do.
Shout out to Janet.
Yeah.
Excellent hair, as I think we discussed
yes.
We recorded. Okay, best technology that you're using right now?
We're quite boring, actually. We run our entire businesses from a couple of apps. There's Slack and Asana. We're massive fans of. I'm sure everyone's going to say that. We also love Bonjuro, of course. Your pals who were there last year. Those are probably our favorites.
Excellent.
I love my Paul Ince fan club app. That's my favorite.
Yeah, and my soundboard that you've probably downloaded from the iOS store, you know, all my idioms and phrases.
All of that stuff. We just have it all lined up on separate machines. We bought separate computers and we can have them all open at once. Amazing. And we can just appreciate them.
Amazing. Okay. best podcast that you're listening to?
What is the best podcast I'm listening to right now?
Can't say your own.
Really good one. I'm going to have to grab my phone.
I'll tell you what I've been listening to recently. I'm a really big fan of, and I missed it when it was on sort of the season. So I've been able to binge them. So Mike and Callie from the membership.
Yeah, guys.
They had a behind the membership podcast where it wasn't just tips. It was interviewing some of their customers and stuff who've built successful memberships in obscure niches. And I got so much value out of that. So for me, that behind the membership podcast was outstanding.
Yeah, I'm also a big reader. So I'm a huge fan of the Marketing Book podcast. I love that podcast. It's probably one of my favorites. And I also love this really unusual one called Hacking Humans, which I really like, which is about social engineering. It's quite interesting.
Ooh. Deep. I do like, I'm more of a reader for deep stuff. Like podcasts, like kind of have to, I listen to them in the car. So they have to be not too distracting, otherwise I might crash. but books I like, and books like that I like as well. Okay, advertising, great ad, TV, radio, whatever that you've seen recently, and why?
Yeah, so we actually saw a thing recently. It was going around virally on LinkedIn that British Airways have an advert that's happening on Piccadilly Circus. Have you seen it?
Yeah.
A big billboard. They've got a big billboard.
Clever.
And every time this plane flies overhead, this kid gets up and follows it. Amazing advert.
Yeah, the kid gets off the floor in the ad and he points at the plane as it flies overhead. And then the name of the flight and where it's going from and to comes up on the screen. It's amazing.
It's one of those things where, you know, you start to realize that maybe this is just one big computer simulation and that we're not real.
I'm personally a big fan of the Oasis drinks ads because they're brutally honest and I love really honest marketing. So I love one of their ads which said, they've got one running right now, which is like, oh no, not another Oasis ad, which I love. And then the one that really started all of this for me was Oasis, we've got sales targets, you're thirsty, buy Oasis.
Fair enough.
It's amazing.
Okay. Right. Next question. You've obviously been to Marketed Live, but why should people come and see us in Nottingham? Why should people come see you actually this year in Nottingham?
Well, we're going to leave you with a complete campaign of how to actually do this segmentation in a really practical, pragmatic way without having to know too much about technology. We're going to give you that whole campaign in the room and help you build it. So that's going to be great. But much more than our presentation, some of the other lineup is incredible. One of the things I really like about it, and this sounds like a tiny thing, but if you've been to a lot of conferences or any conferences, you will understand why this is so important. The way you and your team take care of the delegates to such a tight degree by looking after a really tight welcoming session where there's sort of like nibbles and breakfasty stuff going on and then the lunch, that whole thing being really well organized where there's a lot of focus on the delegates because when so many other conference organizers are busy pandering to the speakers, they sort of forget the delegates in a way. You guys really put a load of emphasis on making it a great experience for the delegates and that connectivity you create between the delegates where there's like networking in the room. It's not like anything you can get from watching an online course or anything like that. You create absolute networking opportunities for relationships, synergies, partnerships to actually happen in that room. So I think that's a real strength you guys have got.
There are so many conferences and events, and I'm using that word in air quotes now, where somebody's hired a room and there's one of those pull-up screens, you know, like you get the easel out thing, you fold the screen around and pull-up screen, a projector on a table. And I'm guilty of having one of those. And this is such like the next level. Like I knew it was going to be good, but honestly, when we walked into the room last year, I was blown away by just how great the place looks.
It's very snazzy.
Thanks, guys. I mean, it is actually a performance space, so I guess you would appreciate that from the things that you do. But I think you just, I think you just nailed it actually in terms of like how we think about that delegate experience. But thank you for that. Nice. Look, thank you so much for being on the show today. It's been really insightful, actually, and it's been great to talk to you. Where can people find out a bit more about you and Response Suite?
Before we tell you that, we've got a little confession to make, Paul. It was something we didn't tell you about before we started. So I'm sorry, my man. We had a secondary secret agenda, like a theme or a topic, as we've been talking to you. So it's
got nothing to do with surveys or marketing or segmentation or emails.
Or Nottingham. It's got nothing to do with any of that stuff at all. But we've been using certain terms of phrase, certain themes, the way we've been speaking about things. And we'd like to see if the listeners can figure out what it is. And if you can figure out what it is, tweet us us at Response Week. For example,
if the theme was, I don't know, farmyard animals, then I might have said something like, oh, we went to that restaurant and I was really pigging out. See, now it wasn't farmyard animals and it wasn't restaurants either, but that's just to give you an idea of how our brain works. As a hypnotist and a mind reader, secretly sprinkling little thoughts into your mind about this theme.
So what do you think the theme was? If you can figure it out, or if you want to listen back and then tweet us at Response Week, we'll figure out some kind of lovely prize. Maybe cuddles. I don't know what it's going to be when you tweet us at Response Week. Now, in terms of if you want to find out more about us, the first thing you should do is book a ticket to Marketed Live and come and meet us in real life. We'd love to do that and see us speak and learn all that sort of stuff. And the other thing you could do is if you want to check out a 14-day completely free trial of Response Week and see how easy it is to literally, if you can use Canva or something simple like that to drag things together and you want to build these campaigns using really smart marketing surveys without having to do any thinking, you could do that by going over to responsesuitedeal.com/likemindmedia. And if you do that, we're going to give you a little extra thing for being a pal of Paul's as well.
Yeah, so if you go to that link that he's just given you, not the normal website, and sign up for the 14-day free trial, we'll actually give you a 4-part video program that we put together called the Survey Marketing Masterclass. We basically teach 8 complete campaigns, end-to-end campaigns to go into different bits of your business using surveys, whether you want to use Response Week or not. You'll get that for free. And you'll also get a free one-on-one implementation call with me or Kennedy. It's not going to be handled by like an assistant or a member of our team on the other side of the world. We actually get in down and dirty in the service with you and help build it all out. So you just head over to responsesuitedeal.com/likemindmedia. You'll be able to see all of that stuff. And obviously sweet is spelled S-U-I-T-E.
That is wicked. I think you've also raised the bar for guests because, you know, every guest that comes on after this one, I'm going to be asking, what's your offer? What are you giving the listeners? You know, what are you doing? Thanks, guys. It's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you.
Our pleasure. Thank you.
Well, that is all for this episode of Marketed Not Live. If you've enjoyed today's show, and don't forget, if you can guess whatever it was that I said, I'm a little bit worried now. Please leave us a review on the podcast platform of your choice and help spread the word about this and about Marketed Live on the 30th of September. Remember that our event brings together experts from all marketing disciplines. So if marketing's your thing, we need to see you there. Visit marketed.live for all the info on speakers, travel options, accommodation, and read the blog post from your fellow attendees and speakers. If you fancy writing something for us yourself, as long as it's about marketing, we'll pretty much put it out there. So until then, we'll see you around.